This talk is brought to you by FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. This is Eternal Life. Who do you say that I am? By Debbie Herbeck.
Good morning. Can you all hear me? Well, I feel very honored that you all have gotten out of bed this early and are sharing this time with you, with me, so thank you very much. What I'd like to do in our short time together is just share my own story with you. And I want to say, as a means of introduction to you, that I would not be standing here today speaking to you if someone like you had not reached out to me 30 years ago. So what I want to do is I share my own story with you, besides to inspire you and remind you how great and awesome God is, that nothing is impossible for God, is to hopefully inspire you when God taps on your shoulder and points to that one person to reach out to that person courageously and in faith and touch that person with your words and with your life and with your example, because it really does make a difference, and it really does matter. Well, I would say undoubtedly every Jewish parent has one hope and one dream for their child, especially for their daughter, that they would raise them up well in the faith, that they would go to a prestigious university, that they would marry a nice Jewish boy who's either going to become a doctor or a lawyer. Well, I went to the University of Michigan, which was a prestigious university. I met a nice Jewish boy, and I fell in love. And that Jewish boy happened to be a carpenter, and his name was Jesus. Not exactly what my parents were hoping for. What I'd like to do is tell you the story of my personal faith journey. I was raised in a Jewish home, and when I was growing up, when I was younger, I thought everyone in the world was Jewish. Is there anyone there that thought everyone in the world was Catholic when you were younger? Okay. I was raised in a Jewish community. All of our friends were Jewish. The kids I went to school with were Jewish. I was surrounded by people that were just like me. And I really had no sense that there was anybody else different than me until I got to the age where I started noticing that. My grandparents, my father's parents, were very devout Jews. They were Zionists.
Is there anyone that can
they
go?
Had...
I think I turned it.
Did you hear that? They were Zionists, which means that they had a huge role in helping Israel become a state. I was raised in Chicago, and my grandparents raised lots of money for the state of Israel. But my whole upbringing was really about being Jewish. My cultural identity, my heritage, my religious upbringing were all about being Jewish. And from the time I was very young, it was drilled into me, you are a Jew, and the most important thing about who you are is your Jewish identity. And you should never do anything to jeopardize that or to forsake that. So that was the message that I had growing up. I would say that as I got a little bit older, my Judaism was definitely a very strong part of my heritage, but God was not a part of my life. I went to school, a Hebrew school, once a week to learn how to speak in Hebrew and learn how to read Hebrew so that I could be bat mitzvah. How many of you know a Jewish person? Okay. Who did not raise their hand? Okay, well, you can come meet me afterwards, and then you can say that you know a Jewish person. When I was 13, I was bat mitzvah, which is, if I can draw the parallel to confirmation, it's about kind of becoming an adult member of the faith. And I had to, with my, I have an identical twin sister and an older brother and a younger brother. And my identical sister and I, twin sister and I, stood up in front of our congregation after studying Hebrew for a whole year and learning how to read out of the Torah, out of the five books of Moses, the first five books of the Old Testament, learning how to read and chant. We got up in front of our congregation and we chanted in Hebrew. And we said to everyone, we are now adult members of our congregation and we want to act like adult members. And we were 13 at the time, which in our society today it was a little bit of a joke because you're not really ready to be an adult member of anything when you're 13. But we did that, and then we had a big party afterwards, and it was just a fun time for us, and it was just an expression of being Jewish. It didn't mean anything to me spiritually. I'd say God was not relevant in my life. I didn't even know if God was there in a personal way for me. I didn't even know if the stories that I had read about and grown up with in the Old Testament were true necessarily. I didn't know very much about Christianity at all. If you had asked me, tell me something about Christianity, I would have said, there are three things that I know about Christianity. I know there's a Pope, I know there's an Easter Bunny, and I know there's Santa Claus. It's true. I didn't know who Jesus was. I knew he was kind of the founder of Christianity. I didn't know anything about him because we were so much sheltered in our Judaism and not encouraged to learn about other faiths. I really didn't know that much about Christianity. Well, after, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my high school years. As I said, I have an identical twin sister and an older brother and a younger brother. And as I got into the high school years, if God was a little bit relevant in my life, he became totally irrelevant as I got to high school. I grew up in an upper middle class family in Chicago, and I pretty much had everything that I needed. I had all the, in terms of materialism, I had money, I had all the things that I could possibly want or thought that I needed. I had friends and popularity. I was getting good grades in school, and I was playing sports, and I was just pretty much successful in everything I was doing. And when I was 15, all of that was about to change, because in my mind, I thought I had absolutely no need for God, and I could do everything on my own. When I was 15, right around this time of year, actually, it was in December, and it was Christmas break, my sister and I and my brother, Mark, who was 2 years older than we were invited on a vacation in the Bahamas with my aunt and uncle. And my brother, Mark, at this time was in college in Illinois, and my sister and I were going to be flying to Florida separately from my brother, and then my brother was finishing up a final, was going to be driving from college, getting on a plane and meeting us in Florida, and that was the plan. Well, when my sister Dana and I got to the airport in Florida, instead of going to our next gate to meet my brother, we were met there by some family friends. And they came up to us and they said, your parents have called us and asked us to meet you here, and your brother's been in a car accident, and we don't know how serious it is, but they've asked us to bring you back to our home with us to wait and to find out what your plans are going to be. And so we went back to this family friend's house, and we waited. And I can describe this day to you like it happened yesterday, even though it happened many years ago. I remember going in the back their yard, and they had a swimming pool, and it was nighttime. And I remember standing by the pool, and I remember praying for the first time in my life. Now, I had said thousands of prayers growing up, most of them in Hebrew, but I remember for the first time praying and really talking to God from my heart and saying to God as I stood by that pool, God, I don't know if you're there. I don't know if you can hear me. I don't know if you're real, and I don't know if you care. But if any of those things are true, please, God, save my brother's life. And it was as if I was standing by the pool and I just took that prayer and I just threw it out into the deep end of the pool, and I was just sitting there thinking, is this prayer going to sink or is it going to float? is God real or isn't he? And it was probably like 2 or 3 minutes after I prayed that prayer that the phone rang in the house. And I looked in the house. It was a sliding glass door. And I looked in as my mom's friend picked up the phone. And I could tell by the expression of her face and the way that she put the phone down that my brother Mark had died. And I remember thinking in that moment, almost like seeing that prayer sink to the bottom of the pool, and I remember thinking, okay, God, you don't care. You're not real. You're not there. And whatever faith I had in God, whatever hope I had that he was real or that he cared about me or he wanted to be in my life, I just let it all go. So the next morning, my sister Dana and I got back on the plane and we headed back to Chicago to be with our family and my parents, who were mourning, beginning to mourn the death of their firstborn son. My brother Mark had been driving back from his final on a snowy 2-lane highway, was not wearing a seatbelt, had been run off the road by a semi-truck. And by the time my parents got to this small hospital that they had brought my brother to, he had died. And so my life, which seemed so manageable and so much in my control, all of a sudden, I had no answers. I had no way, even with my Jewish upbringing, to make sense of this seemingly senseless tragedy. And I remember there are many customs and mourning rites in Judaism, and one of them is that people come to your home for 3 or 4 days, and they mourn with you, and they sit with you, and they comfort you. And I remember going around to different people who were there that I felt like I could talk to. I started with an aunt, and then a teacher, and then another friend, and I said, where is God? How could God allow this to happen? I was asking really basic questions like, where's my brother right now? What happens when you die? And I was angry and I was upset and I was confused. And no one could answer my questions till finally they pointed me to literally the last guy in the line, and it was the rabbi. And I thought, well, surely he has answers for me. He represents my faith. And I sat there with the rabbi and I asked him those questions. And he was quiet for a long time. And then he looked at me and he said, I don't know. I don't know where your brother is. I don't know why God allowed this to happen. But he said, I will pray that you find the answers that you're looking for. And so that was my sophomore year in high school. And I continued on to the next 3 years of high school, just kind of a blur of emotions, a blur of a heaviness and a grief around our family. And the only thing that was in my mind was, well, two things. One was, if this is all there is and you don't know when you're going to die, I want to make the most out of my life right now. That's a very dangerous attitude to have when you're 15 or 16 years old. I won't go into details, but you all know what I mean. And so I tried to live each day as if it was my last day, not making good choices, not thinking about those around me that I might be hurting. My other goal was to get out of the house, to go away somewhere, and to really make my life count for something. And so I got it in my head, and at the time I didn't know why I was so bent on doing this, I do now, that I had to go to the University of Michigan. I didn't know anyone else who was going there. As it turned out, my sister and I, who had been together literally since conception, we were identical twins, was going to a different university, and I was headed off to the University of Michigan, alone on my own for the first time. And I thought, well, this won't be so bad. There's tons of Jews at the University of Michigan. I'll just meet other people like me, and I'll get new friends, and I'll start my life over, and everything will be great. So I remember my parents drove me up to the University of Michigan, which was about 4 or 5 hours from my house, and they dropped me off, and as they left, as I was kind of waving goodbye, I was crying, partially because I was so sad, so happy to see them go and to be on my own, and partially because I was scared to death to be on my own. And I remember walking, this is even before I moved all my stuff, and I still had my stuff in the lobby, and I remember walking down my hallway. It was a freshman hall, huge dorm. And they had all the names of the girls on the doors of the dorm hallway. And I remember walking down and thinking, there's probably lots of Jewish girls on this hall. And I remember looking at all the names on the doors and thinking, nope, I don't see any Kaplans or Bloombergs or Rothsteins. And you ask me, how do you know? And you just know. Are there any Italians in the crowd? Okay, Italians. Don't you know if there's Italians nearby?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Okay. So I'm walking down my hall. I get to my dorm. I'm rooming blind. And one time I was giving this talk, and someone came up to me afterwards, and they go, that's so cool. You had a blind roommate? And I said, no, I'm rooming blind means I didn't know my roommate before he came in. Back then, they didn't have something where you could, you know, get on Facebook or whatever and match yourself up with somebody. I was literally rooming with someone I had never talked to and didn't know, and her name was Lori Brown. And I remember thinking, well, she's definitely not Jewish. And I remember going in, and she had been there for a day or so because she lived closer and had all of her stuff moved in. And I remember going in and going over to her side of the room, and her stuff was all set up, and I remember trying to make kind of polite conversation with her, and I went over to her dresser, and she had a picture on her dresser. It was an 8x10 picture, and I remember looking at it, and I remember saying to her, looking at it, it was a picture of a guy, and I remember asking her if that was her boyfriend. I thought, all right. I thought, I said to her, oh, that guy's kind of cute, you know. Is that your boyfriend? And to her credit, she didn't say this, but I know she was thinking it. You got into school here? She said, actually, you don't know who that is? And I said, no, I don't, actually feeling pretty stupid. And she said, that's Jesus. And then she looked at me, and she said, and that is my boyfriend. And I thought, all right, you're weird. So I countered with, do you know what a bagel is? She had never met a Jewish person before, and so she had never had a bagel. And so it was very clear on that first day that I was in way over my head. And what I found out about Lori Brown was she was a Catholic, and over that summer of her senior year, she had really decided that she wanted to be serious about her Catholic faith and not just be a nominal Catholic but really live it. And so she was very fervent in her Catholic faith. But she decided very wisely, to a certain extent, that we had to coexist in this small little room together. And so she wasn't going to kind of shove it down my throat. She wasn't going to be in my face about it. She was just really going to try and live it. So here I am, this young Jewish girl from the North Shore of Chicago. I've never met a Christian before. I go to the University of Michigan, and my living in the dorms, my first roommate, is a serious Catholic. Go figure. So even though my roommate Lori didn't talk much about her faith, I met this girl on my floor. Her name was Sarah, and she talked nonstop about her faith. I remember her very clearly. She played guitar, and this was in the late 70s, and so she would walk up and down the hallway with her guitar, and she'd knock on people's doors, and she'd sing, and she'd talk to them about Jesus, but really kind of randomly, like... you guys are all probably much more catechized and evangelistically savvy than she even was at the time. But I'd never met anyone like her. And while I thought there was something very unusual about her, there was something about her that I was also very drawn to. Something about her genuineness, something about her character that really drew me in. And Sarah and I became good friends. We had nothing in common except for one thing. And that's that we were both athletes, and we both liked to play sports. So we became workout partners, And we used to go to the gym together, and we would have these debates as we do these activities. And she would quote things to me from the New Testament, like I said, somewhat randomly, and I would quote things back to her from the Old Testament. We kind of have these friendly debates going. About a month or so into the semester, I was taking a class called Great Books. It was an English class, and one day the professor got up and he said, "Your assignment for this weekend is I want you to read the book of Romans and write a paper on it," because we were studying first and second century Rome. So I went up to the professor after class and I said, "Excuse me, I don't have the book of Romans. I noticed it's not on the syllabus." And he looked at me probably the second time like, "And you got into school here?" He said, "It's in the New Testament." I said, "I'm not allowed to have one of those." He said, "I don't care. Find a New Testament and do the assignment." So I knew that my grandfather would kill me if I bought a New Testament. And so I thought, who can I borrow a Christian Bible from so that I can do the assignment? So I went down to my friend Sarah's room, and I told her about the assignment. And she said, "Oh, I have a Bible you can borrow." This is it. She said, "Here, I'm going to put this little ribbon in where the book of Romans is, and you go back to your room and read it. And it's a really hard book, so if you need any help, I'd be glad to explain it all to you." So I took her Bible back, and let me just tell you that a Jewish person, even if they're religious, would never have their own Bible. You'd have the Bible, the scriptures that you'd read in temple. You might have your own a family Bible that would sit on a shelf somewhere. You would never have your own personal Bible that you'd carry around. You would never write in the Bible because the scriptures are considered so holy, even the pages, that if the scriptures were to fall to the ground, you would need to pick them up and kiss them as a sign of reverence for God's word. So I take my friend Sarah's Bible and I open it up to the book of Romans and I begin to read. And after about three or four lines, I'm totally lost. I have no context for what's even going on. It's literally like Greek to me. And so I start to kind of leaf through her Bible, just kind of looking at it because I've never met anyone that has their own Bible. And I'm astonished to find not only does she own a Bible, but she's written and underlined pretty much the whole New Testament. I wish you could all see this, but this is like some of the people in the front can see it. The book of Ephesians was all underlined and highlighted. And then she wrote in the margins, and she'd write things that struck her as she was reading it. And then she ran out of room, and so she wrote on the front, in the front, whoops, see, it's already coming apart. And she wrote in the maps and all over the thing. And as I'm beginning to read her Bible, actually read what she wrote in the Bible, I feel like I'm reading someone's personal diary. And I'm thinking, this is the weirdest thing, because she's reading this book and the book is talking to her. And then she's talking back and they're having a conversation. And I remember feeling kind of creeped out by it. And I remember having this strange sense like if I held on to this book for too long, it might start talking to me. And so I remember going back and just giving her book back like this, her Bible, and saying, "Here, thanks." And I can't even remember many years ago if I even finished that assignment, but I remember the impact that it had on me to actually see this Bible and to begin to understand that this was touching someone's life. Well, Sarah and I continued our friendship, and what I realized is not only was Sarah and Lori Christians, but there were also other Christians on my hallway. I mean, what are the odds? I go my whole life never meeting a Christian. And the first time I get away from home, I'm surrounded by them. I used to get up in the morning because I had an early morning class and take a shower, and these Christian girls would gather in the communal bathroom to have their morning prayer together. And so I felt like everywhere I went, I was surrounded by Christians. And even though there was something in me that knew there was a line that I could not cross, I was very drawn to their friendships, to their relationships, to the way that they were. Okay, I'm going to speed things up a little bit so we can get to the good stuff here. Toward the end of my freshman year, it was probably about February or March of my freshman year, it was Lent. I didn't know it was Lent, but I know now. And Sarah and some of the girls came to my dorm room and knocked on my door and said, "We're going to take a study break. We're going to watch a movie. Do you want to watch a movie with us?" So I said, "Sure." And we went down to the lounge, and it was crowded, and we were sitting on the floor, and the movie began. And I remember leaning over to my friend Sarah and whispering, "What movie is this?" And she said, "Oh, nothing." I said, "What movie is this? I've never seen this movie before." She said, "Oh, it's called Jesus of Nazareth." Have any of you ever seen that one? Okay. Yeah, it's the one where Jesus never blinks, that one, among other things. So anyway, we're watching the movie, and the story of Jesus' life begins to unfold. It's my first time learning about Jesus, and I'm sitting there, and the first thing that comes to me as I'm watching the show is, this guy is Jewish. You guys know that, right? Okay, good. Jesus is a Jew. I never knew that before. I never knew Jesus was a Jew. I mean, you're going to think this is really silly and stupid. Growing up, I thought Jesus Christ. I thought Christ was his last name. Christ is not a Jewish last name. I'm telling you all this in case you ever have a chance to evangelize a Jew, you can understand the mentality here. As I'm watching his life unfold, I'm feeling this immediate attraction to him, first of all, because he's a Jew. And not only is he a Jew, he's a good Jew. He keeps the law. He listens to his mother. He's a good Jew. And then as the story begins to unfold and Jesus comes into his adulthood, I begin to feel drawn to him for another reason. And that is as I begin to see him, and let me just say, this is the Hollywood version of Jesus. But even in this Hollywood version, God is beginning to press himself upon me and reveal himself to me. And as I watch the story unfold, I begin to think, I wish I could be like him. I wish I could be as courageous and strong, as loving and wise. And then there's a point in the story, in the movie, where Jesus comes to a town, and these two women come to him, they're sisters, and they're crying. And I know you know the story. I didn't know the story. And they say to him, "Lord, where were you? If you had been here, our brother would not have died." You know that story? Martha and Mary. And they come to the town where Lazarus, their brother, has died. And as that scene unfolds and as they say that to the Lord, it's like I'm experiencing my brother's death all over again. And it's like this sword is piercing me. And I'm sitting there and I'm saying to God, "Yeah, God, where were you when my brother died? If you had been there, he wouldn't have died." And everything in me wanted to get up and just leave and run out of the room. And I felt like literally like somebody was pressing their hand on my shoulder, and I could not get up and I could not move. And I sat there, not wanting to face another bad ending to the story. But as I watched the story unfold and as I watched Jesus go into this tomb where Lazarus had been dead for more than 3 days, where I knew as a Jew that he was ritually impure and unclean, and I watched Jesus go into that tomb and call forth Lazarus from the dead, and bring him back to life. I think I sat there with my mouth open. And in the darkness of my own spirit, I felt like light came in, and I thought, what if death is not the final answer? What if there is hope beyond this life? What if this man, Jesus, has the power over death? So the movie ended shortly after that. It was being shown in two segments, and I went back to my room that night, and I couldn't sleep. And it was probably about 2 a.m., and I went down the hall to my friend Sarah's room. And I remember I knocked on her door, and no words were exchanged. She opened her door about this wide, and she just did this. And I didn't know what to do, but I remembered that little ribbon, and so I opened up the ribbon, and it was the Gospel according to Matthew. And I sat in my beanbag chair, and I read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I remember coming to the point in John where it said, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will never die, but the one who believes in me will have life forever. And I didn't know what 90% of that meant. I didn't know what resurrection meant, but I knew what it meant when he said, we'll never die. And so that night, in my dorm room at the University of Michigan, sitting on my beanbag chair, I prayed for the second time in my life. And I said, God, I don't know if you're real, and I don't know if you care, but if your son Jesus is the Messiah, I need to know. Show me and give me the faith to believe. And I prayed that prayer, and you know what? Nothing happened. No one sent me a free pizza. My alarm didn't go off. No signs from the heavens that God had heard my prayer. But that night I opened a door, or maybe a small window. And more importantly, God was beginning to open something in me. And I began to pray that prayer every night, sitting on my bed, and essentially asking God to reveal himself to me, if he was there. And I went home for the summer, and my friend Sarah and I continued to correspond, and she visited, and I borrowed her Bible, and I began to read the New Testament secretly at home for the summer, and began to see what Jesus was saying there about who he was and what it meant to be a disciple. And I want to tell you that during that whole time, I had no intention of converting. I knew it was off limits. I knew it would destroy my family, potentially. I was seeking truth, and I was seeking answers to questions that I had. Well, I went back to school in the fall, and I said to my friend Sarah, if Jesus was a Jew, why aren't there any Jews that believe in him? And she said, oh, I know one. Do you want to meet her? I said, no. Because I knew she was trying to set me up. So I went to synagogue that weekend. It was the High Holy Days. It was Yom Kippur, and it's where every good Jew goes on the High Holy Days. And I went there at the University of Michigan, and it was crowded. And as I'm walking out of the building, I literally bump into a young woman, and we begin to talk as we're walking through campus together. And we get to a point where we're about to part, and she says, hey, I just want to say something to you. She said, my name is Abby, and I live in Connecticut, and my grandfather's a rabbi. And she said, when I was 17, my best friend came over one day, and she said, I just met this great guy, and you need to know him. His name is Jesus. So Abby says to me, so I'm Jewish, and I believe Jesus is the Messiah. And I just thought it would be nice for you to know that. So I thanked her, and we parted ways, and we became lifelong friends. And God put her in my life in that moment to say something very simple, something that I needed to hear. Well, I continued through that year in the fall to read the scriptures. And now I was beginning to read the Old Testament, and I was beginning to look at the New Testament. I was beginning to say, is there anything in the Old Testament that tells me about who Jesus might be? And I was reading in Isaiah, and I was reading about the suffering servant and how he was described in Isaiah 53. And I was getting excited about it, like up here intellectually thinking, wow, is there something coming together here? So I go home for Thanksgiving, and I'm sitting with my parents. My sister isn't home yet, and we're sitting having dinner in a Chinese restaurant. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know if any of you had this experience. Like, I'm thinking, well, I'm a college student now, and I'm like, you know, learning all these great things, and I'm going to share with my parents what I'm learning. And they're going to be really impressed. So we're sitting there eating, and I said to my parents, did you ever think that the Isaiah 53, the suffering servant passages, could be referring to Jesus as the Messiah? And I look over, and my mom is now choking on her egg roll. And my dad says, we need to go right now. So we went back to our house, and my parents called a couple they knew who were Catholic. See, we did have some Christian friends. I just didn't know about it. Our token Catholic friends, and they said, you need to come over to the house right away. Our daughter's thinking about converting. You need to talk her out of it. So, being the good Catholics that they were, they came over and tried to talk me out of it. And they said, don't convert. You'll hurt your family. You're a Jew. What you have is wonderful. You have wonderful traditions. You have your own faith. You don't need to convert. That weekend for me was like a sneak preview. It was like a foreshadowing of what the cost would be. My mom stopped talking to me on that weekend. She cried the whole weekend and pretty much just distanced herself and stopped talking to me because she couldn't handle what she thought was going to happen. It was a lot of tears and a lot of emotion. At the end of the weekend, as I got ready to go back to school, my dad grabbed me and he said, promise me one thing. This is what's called Jewish guilt, you guys. He said, promise me one thing. I'll never ask anything of you in your life again. And I said, what? He said, promise me you won't convert. And I can honestly say it was the most honest moment I've ever had with my dad. I looked at him and I said, I can't promise you that. Now, I was not running back to Ann Arbor to convert, but I knew that there was something going on in me that I had to see through to the end. And so Thanksgiving, I came back to school and I was continuing to pray that prayer that I'd shared with you every night and to read the scriptures. And one night I had a dream shortly after I came back from Thanksgiving. And in that dream, I was standing in a long, dark corridor and I heard this voice call out to me, who do you say that I am? And in the dream, I just saw this figure at the end of the corridor, and I couldn't see who it was. And I said, I don't know who you are. And then a second time, the voice called out to me, who do you say that I am? And now I could just see the shape and the outline of the person, but I couldn't see who it was. And I was clearly frustrated in the dream, and I said, I don't know who you are, but I want to know. And then a third time that voice called out and said, who do you say that I am? And in the dream I looked up and that person was standing right in front of me. And now not only could I see the outline and the shape, but I could actually see their face. And I looked up and I said, it's Jesus. You're Jesus. And I woke up from the dream. And I went that morning to meet my friend Sarah. And I said, Sarah, I had the weirdest dream. And I explained the dream to her. And I said, do you think there's anything to it? And she said, and I said, I know Jesus was standing there in the dream in front of me. And I knew it was him. But I just, it's too hard. I just don't have the faith to believe. It's just too hard. And she said something very simple and very wise, which at the time I didn't really know was in the Bible. But she said, just keep asking, just keep seeking, just keep knocking, and God will answer your prayer. And so I continued to pray that prayer. and to pray it at night. And one night, just a week later, I was sitting on my bed. I was still living in the dorms. We had a loft, and I was sitting on my bed in the loft, and I was praying that prayer. My roommate was asleep, and I was awake, sitting there reading my Bible and praying. And the room was dark, and I said to God, the same prayer I had been praying every night for 9 months, God, if you're real, if Jesus is the Messiah, show me and give me the faith to believe. And that night, this is the truth, as I prayed that prayer, my dorm room at the University of Michigan, one of the most secular universities in the country, my dorm room filled with this incredible light and presence and power. And I knew that God was there in that room with me. And I was scared to death. And the only thing I knew in that moment to do was I got down on my knees and I said, God, I am sorry for messing up my life. I'm sorry for breaking some of your commandments. I'm sorry for bending all of them. Those are the Ten Commandments in my mind. And if you give me another chance, God, I know I can do it better next time. And as I was down on my knees and I was essentially repenting, the room was not only filled with God's presence, but Jesus then was right there with me. And I saw him, and he stood before me like this. And he said, here, it's for you. He held out his hand to me. And in my mind, I was thinking, what is it? And he said, it's faith. You asked for it, right? It's a gift. You did nothing to earn it or deserve it, but you asked for it. And it's a gift, and it's for you. And honestly, in that moment, as Jesus reached out his hand and offered me the gift of faith, I knew in a split second that it was all true. I knew Jesus was the Messiah. I knew God loved me. I knew God had a plan for my life. I knew that he would never fail me or forsake me. And I knew this was the most real moment of my life. In all those moments, and years of never knowing him, and all those months of questioning and asking, in one split second, I knew it was all true. And I knew that no one could take that away from me or ever change my mind. So let me ask you, what do you do if you're in your dorm room and God comes to you and offers himself to you? You say yes, right? And so in that moment, I said yes. I believe you're the Messiah. I want you in my life, and I want to live for you. Not just as a phase or a hobby, but I want this to be forever. And I walked through the door of faith that day, and I said yes to Jesus. And my life radically changed forever. I ended up it's a very long story, but I ended up coming into the Catholic Church. I ended up meeting Mary, his mother, who led me that way. And as only a good Jewish mother can do, made the church a home for me. And I ended up saying to God, God, not only do I want to live for you and believe in you, but I want my whole life to express that in whatever you're calling me to, in every opportunity that you give me. I want to tell people that Jesus is real and no one is too far from him and no situation is impossible for him. And so I've continued to do that, and I've continued to see the blessing and the fruit and the ripple effect of 30 years ago in my dorm room saying yes to the Lord. 30 years ago, people reaching out to me and offering me the gift of life through their own faith life, through their own example. I just want to close it here with just a story about something that happened just a couple weeks ago to give you a sense of what happens when you say yes to God with your whole life and you decide that you want your life to reflect that. It's kind of a weird week. This doesn't happen to me often, but I was had three things happen in the course of the week which just confirmed to me how important it is to give your whole life to God and to be open to sharing your story. Three unrelated things that happened. First thing was I was in Ohio for just a night sharing my testimony with a group of women, and I was coming back from Ohio. It was about a two-hour drive, and I was in the gas station at 11:30 at night, and I had still had an hour to go to get home, and I was with a friend, and I was in the bathroom coming out, and she was talking to this woman, and as I'm walking by getting ready to go to my car, this woman grabs me and she says, "So what were you just doing?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "So who are you just talking to? This is a total stranger in an airport, in a restroom area of a gas station." And in that moment, I thought, well, I could just kind of brush it off because I'm tired, or I could really tell her what I was just doing. So I begin to tell this woman, well, I just was sharing my faith story with all these women. She goes, "Yeah, well, what about it?" And so I began to tell her, and it was clear she wasn't going to be satisfied, so she heard what I was doing. And so we ended up talking. I ended up sharing with her what I had shared with these women, and then she said, "I'm really desperate right now. I just lost my job and my car and my home, and do you think Jesus is coming soon?" I said, "I have no idea. If I knew, you'd probably think I was weird." But I said, "I do know that we're supposed to live each day as if Jesus is coming soon, and God has sent me here, put me here in this place right now to tell you that so that you can go back and really live your life for Him." So that was the first thing that happened. That was on a Sunday. And then 3 days later, a friend called me and said, he's a student at U of M, and he said, "I just met this girl in the dorms, and she needs to know about God. Would you get together with her?" I said, "Okay." So we met in a coffee shop, and I said, "What's going on? I never met this girl in my life." And she says, "Tell me your story." I said, "No, I want to hear about you." She said, "Tell me your story." So I told her my story, like the 5-minute version, like I just told you guys. Yeah. I talked a lot faster. And she started to weep as I was telling her my story. And I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "I lived on the floor last year that you lived on 30 years ago. And for the last number of months, I've been praying the exact same prayer that you prayed." She said, "I'm Catholic and I don't know God, but I want to know Him. Do you think I could know Him?" And I said, "Absolutely." And I looked around at all these students in the coffee shop and I said, "Can we pray right now?" She said, "I would love that." So in the middle of the campus, in the coffee shop, with a student who had lived in the same floor of the dorm that I had lived in, I prayed with her that God would be more real in her life. The next morning, she emailed me and she said, "Thanks so much for getting together. I came home and I told my friend all about your story and all about God. She wants to get together with you next week because she wants to know God." This is the ripple effect. And then the last story is a day later, I'm in my office, I'm about to leave, and the phone rings, and I thought, I'm not going to get it. I pick it up, and this lady says, and I knew she was Jewish the minute she started talking, she said, "CD or DVD? Just like that. I said, "What?" She said, "I want your testimony. Should I get the CD or the DVD? I said, "Get the DVD," and I told her why, and she said, "All right, here's my address," and she starts to tell it to me, and I said, "Oh, I know exactly where that is." Turns out she lives 2 minutes from where I grew up. I said, "Are you Jewish?" She said, "Yep." I said, "Do you believe in Jesus?" She said, "No." I thought, why are you getting my DVD? But I had no idea how she even knew about it, but she said, I said, "Do me a favor, watch my DVD and call me back and tell me what you think about it." I didn't want to be too pushy. And she said, "Okay, I will." And I said, "Okay, well, I'll look forward to it." And she said, "Wait, don't hang up." I said, "What?" She said, "Is He worth it all?" I said, "Jesus?" She said, "Yes, is he worth it all? I said, absolutely. He's worth it all. She said, I'm glad you have peace. I've been searching for the truth for 16 years. I said, watch my DVD, pray and ask God to reveal himself, and I hope you find that peace and that truth. So in the course of the week, God was at work. And God is at work in all the places God is putting each one of you. What I want to leave you with as we end this session is to encourage you to reach out to those around you, not just those you're comfortable talking to, but those who need the Lord, to those pagans and those Jews and those Muslims and those Protestants and those nominal Catholics, to reach out and to share your stories and to share your lives and to share your faith, to be a witness in the environments that God puts you so that you can impact someone's life for the good. And I thank God that 30 years ago, someone in a dorm at the University of Michigan had the courage and the inspiration to do that for me. God bless you. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. If you would like to listen to more talks, please visit us at www.focusequip.org.